Welcome to Mayo Clinic Educator Central, brought to you by the Learning Solutions Center at Mayo Clinic. I'm Stacey Kraft, and for this episode, I am so excited to welcome distinguished author, speaker, and innovative educational expert Michael Horn. Michael holds a BA in history from Yale University and an MBA from the Harvard Business School, and serves as the head of strategy for the Entangled Group, is senior partner for Entangled Solutions, and co-founder of the Clayton Christensen Institute for Disruptive Innovation. He is an expert on disruptive innovation, online learning, blended learning, competency-based learning, and learner-centered approaches. In fact, in 2014, Michael was selected as the Eisenhower Fellow to study innovation in education in Vietnam and Korea, and was named as one of the 100 most important people in the creation and advancement of the use of technology in education by Tech and Learning. Michael is the author and co-author of what I consider to be multiple essential books, including Disrupting Class, How Disruptive Innovation Will Change the Way the World Learns, Blended, Using Disruptive Innovation to Improve School, and he has recently released a new book called Choosing College, How to Make Better Learning Decisions Throughout Your Life. So welcome, Michael.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I wanted to get this started today by talking about the education landscape, strategies and options. They're becoming more varied for all learners. What can you tell me from your work what learners are considering today and how that is shaping all sides of education from higher ed to even corporate training?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we did a ton of research on this for my new book, Choosing College, creating literally over a couple hundred mini documentaries of students choosing school after high school. And what we saw is that there's sort of five primary sets of reasons that students go back to school, in essence. The first one is that they want to basically get into their best school. So it's almost redundant on itself in some ways, which was a strange answer for us. But you know, they put in the work. They're looking to get into the best for its own sake. They want the brand, the reputation, the prestige that comes with the experience. For students choosing regular college, you know, that often is a classic brick and mortar experience. But for adult learners, that's really belonging to a group of people that they can say, hey, I was a part of that. The second job that we saw people going to higher education for to continue to learn was really to do what's expected of them. So this is often when you thinking about it in the adult learning context, this was basically your employer coming to you and saying, hey, you got to get more continuing education credit, or you need to level up on this. And the learner themselves wasn't super excited about the experience, but they were doing it because they felt like they had to satisfy someone else. The third reason that we came across was probably less relevant for your audience in this podcast, but it was students who were running away from something, and education was something socially acceptable that they could say they were turning toward. And then the last two, I think, are hyper-relevant. One of them was what we're calling help me step it up. So these were individuals who were looking around them, and they said, gosh, this just isn't me, and I have a child on the way, or I just took a new mortgage out or whatever else, and I've got to earn more, be more, do more, and I'm going to step it up. Today is the day I'm going to go back and get more education so I can do more in my life. We saw a lot of people, they were maybe healthcare technicians or working the front desk in a hospital clinic, and then they would say, holy cow, if I just became a nurse and started to do all that, like I could double my salary overnight, right? So I'm going to go back to school and get that nursing degree.
Yeah.
And then the other was what we call help me extend myself. And this is the last one where learners were basically saying, like, I've always wanted to do more and be more. Life's okay right now, but now I have the opportunity and the time and the money, and I'm going to go pursue this dream I've always had.
Well, Ian, that leads me to my next question, I think, which is, when we look at what you just described, which is learners and students and what drives them and what they're looking for, why should educators care? How does this impact them?
Yeah, it's such a good question, because I actually had a reporter literally today reach out to me and say, I'm really interested in writing about your book, but I cover the educator side of this, and a lot of what you're writing about speaks to the consumer. What does this have to do with educators? And from my perspective, it's everything, because if you don't understand why learners are coming to you, it's very hard to serve them effectively. And in point of fact, if learners are coming to you for many different motivations, and you're trying to be a one-size-fits-all location to serve them all, you're going to be sub-optimizing for all of those people in different ways, right? You're going to make trade-offs that benefit one group over another, and then you know, two decisions later, it's going to be the opposite, where you're favoring that first group instead of the second. And as a result, you come out with a suboptimal program that doesn't fit anyone. And it also often drives up costs of the program because you incur a lot of administrative overhead as an educator trying to juggle between these very different demands on your time. So I'll give you a very clear example of this. If you're serving learners who have the Help Me Extend Myself job, this is a deeply personal experience for them. It's all about bettering themselves, challenging themselves, and so forth. Interaction with other students, not super important to them. It's sort of like they're reading the book, but not the book club, if you will. But they really want that personal encouragement from the instructor. And so if you're the educator, being able to understand, hey, this person came to me because they want to enhance, this center that they've built at this hospital, or they've always wanted to be a leader in this regard, or do a certain project for my class. Being able to connect the learning that you design back to that reason that that individual is here, super important for that individual to succeed and be motivated and so forth. You don't have to be facilitating large group conversations, though. Contrast that with the Help Me Step It Up crowd. A lot of those people sort of want the social supports and help to make sure that they complete, and they almost want the community that's going to be pushing them along to step it up in their lives and in their education. And that's a very different design. So as an educator, starting to understand why people are coming to you really leads you to a very different set of design choices that you would make.
I'm wondering, you talked about the different motivations and groups of learners. Do you ever encounter a blending of these? Because I believe that there are learners that, I've had interactions with that are interested in perhaps the best, but also learning in the most innovative way. They want to be the best at the job that they eventually get. So I'm wondering, did you ever find any blending of these groups, or are there subgroups?
Yeah, your phrasing at the end is the right way to think about it. That there's subgroups within each of these jobs, right? So get me into my best school. The cynical way of looking at it is it's all about just pushing the buttons for its own sake, right? Because of what society might expect of you. But a lot of people, I think the best for them is actually deeply intrinsic in the sense that I want to get into the best experience, but I want to do that because I'm genuinely interested and passionate about this. So it's not like I have to step into up in my life or extend myself in a way that I've always wanted to. It's just like this is the next step on my journey, and I want the best for me in the pursuit of being the best. And that is definitely present in that first group. For people listening who are trying to figure out who am I serving, looking at those subgroups is going to be really, really important because each of these jobs obviously has a lot of context and nuance once you get in the context of a specific program that's going to differ. To your other question, do people have multiple of these things at one time? The way I guess I would think about it is twofold. One, they tend to sharply identify with one of these, but they could be more or less about other ones in the group, if that makes sense. So I could be all about getting into my best. And, step it up is also sort of important to me, but I'm really not in the do what's expected of me group. And I'm really not about getting away from something. Like those two things just don't describe me at all. That can totally be a way to think about it. The other thing that I think is interesting is, for example, you might switch these jobs during the course of your experience. So you might come to a program to get into your best school. You get into your best school, and then you're like, okay, now what? And then you're like, oh, wow, I got to step it up. This is actually a really hard program, and I didn't realize how much work it's going to be. And I've got to step it up to be all I can be, right? And so you might actually move jobs through the course of your experience.
That's so interesting. And so, a lot of schools and, well, education programs in general have moved towards initiatives for blending learning and other sort of disruptive models or whatnot. Have you seen if the learner motivation is driving that? Also, I guess a secondary question to that is the move for blended learning valid?
I think absolutely the demand is driving a lot of this innovation. I think the question for an educator is to step back and say, and look, I write about blended learning all the time. My previous book was called Blended. Am I blending for its own sake, or am I blending to better serve my students along some dimension that's important to them? And I think you really want to be in the latter, not the former, as you're innovating.
Right. So let's just take, for example, medical education. In that scenario, we're talking about incredibly dense, a lot of information that the learner needs to take in. I think blended learning is probably a better model than just like a stage in the stage type model. Gives learners a
Totally.
chance to sort of take it in at their own pace, prepare, and then come to sessions and, hopefully do a deeper dive or group activities or whatnot. And I guess my question to you, now that I've rambled my opinion, is do you think that blended learning has any kind of benefits for curriculums that are incredibly dense and difficult?
Yeah, I'm 1,000% with you. I mean, I think the reason, frankly, that the Sage on the Stage model has persisted is because so many learners are not coming for the learning, but because they're checking a box or because they're all about the brand or prestige, and it's easier, right, for many faculty to just continue delivering the same lecture that they've always delivered over and over again. I'm totally with you, though, that from a learning perspective, the better experience. For I think almost anything, but certainly for what you described, something with dense topical material and the like, a better experience is one in which you can effectively chunk the information outside of the lecture and put people in active learning scenarios where they're not just viewing even a lecture online, but they're maybe working through a series of short passages, some videos, some text space, where they're constantly answering questions, right, about the experience. For example, like an app like Osmosis, right, that helps you review what you've learned in medical education. That can actually be a primary learning app if you think about it. We know that the research is incredibly clear that an active learning experience beats a passive learning experience by like 10x in terms of what you're going to retain and learn. And so if you can create an online experience outside of the classroom where students have control over the time, pace, path, and place of the learning, and it's more active, they're going to retain more. They're going to be able to spend time with their misunderstandings, get feedback from the system, and figure out, gosh, why am I just not getting this concept? I'm going to go find another source to help explain it to me, and on and on and on. And then when they come into the in-person experience, I think you use in-person for what it's uniquely meant to do. And so there, I think I would love to see medical schools and medical education more generally much more actively creating experiential learning opportunities where you're not now just coming into a lecture hall to answer questions with the faculty, although that's still an improvement over the lecture. But why not do simulations, projects? You're actually in the hospital working with a patient who's come in with a group of your fellow peers, and how are you going to react and interact with that and so forth? I think those can be really exciting opportunities, motivating, but also much more deeply embed the learning because now you've shifted to an active learning standpoint where I'm actually part of the learning experience as opposed to passively intaking the experience, which we know you're going to retain less than 10% of the information.
And I think it's worth noting that creating a quality blended learning sort of strategy and then implementing it and designing the elements and creating the, in-class activities that are active and connected, maybe team-based learning or something, is difficult. That it is work. It's probably more difficult than just creating a lecture. I think that's worth noting that it is but it's worth it is what I'm kind of hearing. And also what I think as well. It's worth it to put your effort into that. And that kind of circles back to what you were saying a little bit ago, where you said, look to your learners to see if blended learning is the right fit, not do blended learning just for the sake of it, but maybe blended learning is the right fit for all learners.
Well, so I'm biased on this, and I agree with you personally. But I guess I can acknowledge that for some students, we may offer the best learning experience, period, and it might not be what they're actually buying, if that makes sense. And so I think I'm objective enough that I can step from that and understand it. I guess the second thing I would say is, I think there are certain circumstances where a fully online or virtual experience might be the right fit, not because
Oh,
it's
that's
right
true.
in a vacuum the better learning experience for an individual, but because they can't attend for some reason, right, in a brick and mortar facility. But writ large, I'm totally with you. If we're talking about how to create the best learning experience where people will actually retain what they learn and they can actually practice and so forth, there's just no doubt in my mind that a thoughtful design and implementation that leverages technology is so much better than a traditional lecture. And frankly, it's even better than a traditional seminar. And so this is going to triple down, I guess, on your point, which is, I challenge anyone to look at, say, what the Minerva Project has created, which, for those that don't know, it's the first elite liberal arts school to be launched in the last 100 years in the United States, and launched about 5 years ago in San Francisco. Students travel all around the world in this college. And so they're co-located, but the learning experience is exclusively online in this technology-mediated seminar. And it is the most active learning experience you've ever seen in your life. Frankly, it looks exhausting. It is so much more robust than a college seminar because no one can hide in it. There's no sort of nodding out and closing your eyes for a little bit or whatever else, because you're constantly being asked questions, put on stage to debate questions. It's incredibly active, and I think it's far and away better than any college seminar that I had. If the measurement is learning, there's no question in my mind. If the measurement is something else, which again, I think is sort of one of my takeaways, is learners aren't always going for the learning.
Right. Yeah, and I wonder, is it up to us as educators or people invested in education to, yes, answer to and adapt to the reasons why learners are seeking learning so that we can engage them and get them to come to our programs, but at the same time, still try to make our learning more effective, even if that isn't what they care about?
Yeah, and I'm with you on this. I mean, if I'm an educator listening to this, you recognize the value that blended learning can yield because you can create a more active learning experience, right, for individuals. What I think it's incumbent on us is to help educators stop seeing this false narrative that the use of online technology is somehow inferior to what we've always done, and start to craft a better narrative where people realize the best actually is a robust blended experience. Like the lecture that we all had growing up from the star professor, that's not actually the best. And if we can help craft that narrative and be more direct about it, not shy about it, but direct about it, like you've been, I think that's going to be really important, because then it will reset people's expectations of what the best is, and people will choose around that. And I think that's something that we should be more unabashed about.
When thinking about, this idea that online elements are inferior to a star lecture, I feel like a lot of people have had exposure to poorly designed online learning or poorly designed blended learning, and that exists, and it can be inferior if it is done poorly, and that has potentially sour them, especially if it's maybe their first exposure to the concept, and if they're coming from a history of a more traditional teaching, strategy. A caveat to all of this, I think, is can the person, the star lecturer, really be superior? I think they can if they have a special mix of charisma and star power, and how much more powerful could they be if they engaged in more innovative strategies so that they could harness their star power, as I want to call it, even more intentionally and powerfully.
Yeah, totally. So on the first one, I 100% agree again, which is that just because something's online and blended doesn't make it good. It's just sort of the potential is so much more vast. And I think we've seen a ton of really bad online and blended experiences, which to be fair, in some cases it's been fine because it's been better than the alternative, nothing at all for some learners. But simply recording your lecture and putting it online is not what you and I have in mind by this, right? And yet we've seen a huge set of faculty do that in the massive open online courses, like on Coursera and places like that, where, yeah, they might take a break every 5 minutes and allow you to digest, but it's still fundamentally just a lecture online. And worse than that, it's not a lecture online for a select group of students. It's for anyone who might lack some of the background knowledge and experiences, right, that are expectations of taking that course in a traditional environment. To your second point, I think that's probably true as well. The way I've always thought about it is there are certain faculty who are on the cutting edge of not just sort of delivering knowledge, but actually creating knowledge. And it's worth learning at their feet, if you will, if they're not delivering the same old lecture every single year, because you're actually literally getting the most up-to-date information in a field in a way that would be impossible to keep up to date through technology. It's just the production rate would take too long. And so for them to come in and say, hey, let me tell you a story about what we are literally doing day to day in my lab or whatever it might be, and keeping you up to date and breathless with excitement around that, I think it'd absolutely be magical. In my experience, though, I think we often confuse sort of the storytelling element, which, to be fair, storytelling is a wonderful way to educate. It's a way that humans naturally remember things. But we often confuse that with a great learning experience, which is sort of the retention and so forth. And I think it goes to your other point, which is how much better could those star faculty be if there were some instructional designers behind them helping them understand the latest on learning?
So kind of to your point earlier, I see this as being a shift from really just learning disseminators towards facilitators of learning. Do you agree with that point? And do you see any benefit to an educator reimagining their role as a facilitator versus?
Yeah, I think you're right that it's a key shift that we have to move from teaching and the delivery of lessons, if you will, to learning and the facilitation thereof. I think that's the exact right point. I think it's tough in some cases because as educators, they sort of want the sage on the stage experience, right? They want to be the star power. But I think for most people, if they step back from that, to be able to work with a team, right, instructional designers and others at a university or any program that are creating a really robust learning experience, that could be super fun, I think. And it's going to be way more rewarding in terms of how it's received by learners and the impact and results that it has. And ultimately, look, I know it for sure as well. I speak around the country, constantly, and it's very easy for me to fly into a place, deliver an hour-long lecture that, yeah, I've customized, for the audience, but realistically, it's my lecture, right? That's very easy to do, but at the end of the day, I don't see much impact from that on the other side of it, right? I don't know how many people remember it after 4 days. It's sort of the half-life of a lecture, I think. And to move to an orientation where we're actually really impacting lives and helping them learn knowledge, develop skills, and be able to apply those, I think that's just a much better orientation for the field and much more exciting for educators. And I think for a field that's often disparaged, unfortunately, it's a way that they could actually show their value to society in ways that I think would be appreciated if you're literally turning lives on a constant basis, not sort of a, oh, I hit that one person who had that light bulb moment in my class who I got 90 plus percent of the students in my class to be able to do something new. That's like, that could be game changing for our world.
I agree. And when I think about sort of traditional lectures and how to change that type of teaching model from just disseminating to facilitating, especially when there's so much information in some of these dense programs to disseminate, that some of it really is sort of like this must be disseminated. There really isn't a way to facilitate learning without taking, 20 years to learn all the stuff. But some ways I'm a big fan of reflection. I think that you could even like merge and do sort of like a hybrid thing where you maybe keep some of your traditional teaching, but integrate some small group discussions or some discovery activities or reflection activities that help learners learn how to learn, I guess I want to get at, so that they can become lifelong learners at in their field. Really just process the information more deeply.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of cognitive science research also to back up what you just said. And my sense is what we ultimately want to do is shift the learning environment to one in which individual students have some agency over the process. And so each week they come in and they set goals for what they want to learn. They get to learn it. They get to show evidence of their learning. And then they get to reflect, right? Which is exactly what you just said. Reflect on what actually happened, what went well, what didn't, what are they going to do to make it better next time, so that they develop that metacognition and that ability to know how they learn so that they can shape it on an ongoing basis. The second thing, and last point on this, I guess, is I'm also really encouraged by some of the mobile learning experiences that are starting to emerge. So if you think about a lot of online learning experiences, still were very video heavy and very lecture heavy in many cases. A lot of the mobile learning experiences that are emerging, because they've designed around the constraints of a screen size of a phone and limited bandwidth and the like, they've taken the result of a more active learning experience where it's short bursts of text where every 6 to 7 seconds you're answering a question, and then there's a pause at the end of a, say, 5 to 8 minute module where you step back and you think about or you discuss, what did I just engage in and learn and so forth. And so experiences, for example, Smartly has like the Smartly MBA. Duolingo helps you learn language in this way. There's Pensar Learning in corporate environments. All these sorts of short form mobile experiences that are incredibly active, I think are going to be a much better way to chunk a lot of that information so that I can quickly not just learn it, but actually actively construct it, if you will, through the answering of questions. I can take with a huge volume of information, I can actually simplify that significantly. I remember being struck by when the Smartly folks, they took my book Blended, which is like a almost a 300-page book, I think,
Yeah, I have it.
and they took it and they reduced it to like a short series of modules on the platform. And I was like, don't tell anyone, but this would be a way better way to learn what we were trying to accomplish in the book, because it's much more efficient and it probably cements in your brain far better than someone reading the book, if that makes sense. I assume you can just Google it and find the course. I actually don't know where it's kept these days, but I found it to be incredibly, they did it because they just said, like, this is so in concert with what we're trying to create that we would like to create a course around this learning experience to help people know what they're going through. I was like, sure, that'd be amazing. And I was just blown away with what they created that I thought, if you were really about the learning here, this would probably be the most efficient way to figure, to get that.
Now, this may have nothing to do with what we just talked about, but I feel like I have to
Sure.
just share it. Maybe you saw the story. I saw a story, I think last week on NPR about these rats. I think they're probably crazy. I'm
Oh, the
talking about.
driving rats. The
Yes.
driving rats.
Yes, the
Yes.
driving rats. And
Yeah.
the reason I bring that up is you mentioned agency, personal agency. And in the article, they noted that they felt or they theorized that the personal agency that learning to drive the car and the little plastic bottle and getting their Fruit Loops and all that and the learning process allowed them, made them healthier, happier rats. And they were producing more of the good stuff, good hormones in their bodies that sort of indicated low stress and a happier life. And so just, I guess, to circle back to the agency, having personal agency in what you do, being very important to succeeding and being happy in life in general. And I don't know if
Yeah.
that's, I'm making connections from rats to humans here, but it was a cute story.
Well, if people haven't checked it out, they ought to check out the videos alone. They're amazing. But I think the bigger point is right, which is developing agency. Agency isn't a design principle. I think some educators mistake it as like, oh, I'm just going to give someone ownership over the learning when they might not have the background knowledge and so forth to make those decisions. But instead, thinking about it as how do I scaffold someone so that they can become agents of their own learning in this field and develop that ability to make their own choices. That I think is, as an educator, in some ways, I mean, it's the old adage, right? Better than giving a person a fish is to teach them how to fish. I think it's the same thing here, which is if you can help develop learners into agents of their own learners and to build agency in them so that they can make those choices and have ownership over what and how they do things. That sense of control is incredibly, sort of from a dignity perspective of apparently not just humans, but rats as well, is incredibly important, I think. And it's something that comes out in the learning process. And we know that the current way the traditional way we do education actually works against that agency concept, that it's much more we tell you what to learn when we tell you to learn it. And it sort of flies in the face of what developmentally, I think, the research shows motivates individuals to actually consume. And like you said, I think I'm quite convinced that the tie to healthier, happier humans is there as well.
We've covered a lot of ground here today and talked about a lot of topics. And I wanted to ask you before we ran out of time, for educators And I'm talking a very broad spectrum of educators, from, an instructional designer or a coordinator, all the way up to a faculty member or even administrator. Do you have any advice or tips on how they can start to incorporate disruptions or really meet their student needs or wants better?
Yeah, so I'll give two tips. One, I think, is there's sort of disruption at the program level, right? Which is creating more affordable programs, which is one set of things that administrators and so forth should be thinking a lot about. And there, I think, in some ways you have a blank canvas, if you will, to separate from what you've always done and reimagine what you could create. And there, I'd say, start from a blank slate of what learners with what motivations are you trying to serve, and how do you build a program that is really high value for them, and what would you construct to do that? And so that sort of gives you a blank canvas to design on. If you're a teacher of an individual course, frankly, I think what you said much earlier in the conversation is a great place to start, which is just do a simple flipped classroom. I mean, in some ways, people are sick of the phrase similar to disruption of flipping classroom, but I think it's so powerful as sort of the gateway drug, if you will, into this universe of creating better experiences, because you've all of a sudden shifted a whole bunch of active learning and when learning occurs and agency, if you will, to learners out of class time. And you all of a sudden reimagine what you can do with classroom time. And you might start simply where you say, well, everyone, look at this video the night before, and then we're going to come in and talk about it as an active class. And then you realize, wow, 50% of my class got it and 50% didn't. And so it doesn't actually make sense maybe for me to do the same activity with all 100%. And so what am I going to do different next time? And so it's not that you have to create all the change at once, but you can start iterating to create gradual change as you start to see what works and what makes you more effective at ultimately reaching that 100% group. And so, you and I have talked about a lot of techniques that can be pretty advanced and take some time to do. But I guess I would say dive in the deep end. Don't worry about diving in the deep end. Just make sure you jump in the pool at the first place so you can start to get some experience and repetition and start to figure out what works right for the learners that you're serving today.
That's fantastic advice. Thank you so much for joining us today, Michael. I really appreciate it. Fantastic conversation.
Well, this has been a heck of a lot of fun. I really appreciate you having me.
If you have any ideas for topics, would like to be a guest, or want to reach out to us, send us an email at edufi@mayo.edu.